If you think things have been volatile in the Middle East in recent years, Skip Heitzig says we haven't seen anything yet.
The prophet Jeremiah, looking through time, announces a day is coming. There is none like it, for it is the time of Jacob's trouble. Israel's trouble. Trouble is going to befall the Jews. You say, wait a minute, trouble has already befallen them on a number of occasions. You're right, but all of those things have merely been previews of coming attractions. They will all pale in comparison to what is coming in these last days.
Make the connection at the foot of the cross. Study the Word of God and find the way into His love. And take the time to read, for Jesus took the time.
Over 2 million people travel to the Holy Land every year, and about 60% of them are Christians. The Holy Land is a place that is sacred to a lot of people, and hence the religious desire to travel there as a pilgrimage. Unfortunately, it's also an area of the world that's hotly contested, and it's the epicenter for many of the world's ongoing conflicts. Well, today in The Connection, we'll explore whether or not it will ever truly be safe to travel to the Holy Land. But before we begin today's study, this month, Skip Heitzig connects you with Dr. Erwin Lutzer. And here's more.
If you tend to tune out the hopeless news the world slams at you day after day, you're probably not alone. But as believers in Jesus, we need to be spiritually tuned into what's happening around the world. That's why this month's resource package from The Connection includes Pastor Skip Heitzig's book, Homeland Security, which challenges us to pick up our spiritual armor and fight for our families. Also included is Dr. Erwin Lutzer's book, The Cross in the Shadow of the Crescent, plus an exclusive DVD interview with Pastor Skip and Dr. Lutzer delves deeper into this issue.
What we see happening in the Middle East is a glimmer of what can happen when you have radicals who really set the agenda for others. And that's true here in America.
You'll want to check out this package of Erwin Lutzer and Skip Heitzig's DVD and books that are a real wake-up call for all of us. This resource is yours when you make a donation of any amount at connectiononline.org/offers or call 1-800-922-8888.
And remember, it's important for us to hear about the ways you're able to apply these teachings in your daily walk with the Lord. Let us know when you email mystory@connectiononline.org. So should you keep your reservations to travel to Israel? Or perhaps more importantly, should you ever make travel plans to see the homeland of Jesus? Stay with us today on The Connection to find out.
And make the connection.
As we begin today's study in Matthew chapter 24, Skip Heitzig talks a bit about whether or not it's really safe to travel to the Holy Land.
Taking a tour to Israel is one of the highlights of any Christian's life. But the most frequently asked question that people have regarding a trip to Israel is this: is it safe? And when I'm asked that, I ask them back, well, compared to what? If you're comparing it to parts of Los Angeles, it's safe. If you're comparing it to a dairy farm in Idaho or Nebraska, it might not be as safe. And so they'll then say, well, then I'm going to wait. I'd love to go. I'll go to Jerusalem one day, but I want to wait till it's safe. Then I'll say, well, you're going to wait a long time, like till the millennium, because I don't think it's going to get safe anytime soon. Jesus predicts a time is coming when no one is going to want to take a tour to Israel, and if there was one, it would be canceled, because a time is coming upon those people in that area that will be the worst ever. Israel is an interesting group of people, interesting place. Israel has survived 400 years of slavery, 2 deportations, 2,000 years of dispersion around the world, a Holocaust, and a host of other such attacks. According to one writer, Jerusalem has seen 36 wars, that city alone. 17 times it's been leveled to the ground, reduced to ashes. 18 times it has risen. It's that kind of activity that caused ancient historian Flavius Josephus to write, "No other city has ever suffered such things. The calamities which have happened to anyone from the beginning do not seem comparable to those which have befallen the Jews." There's an interesting little quip that comes to us from the Talmud. The Talmud is the codification of all the laws and commentaries on Old Testament scripture. There's a little saying in the Talmud that says, 10 measures of suffering have descended upon the world, 9 of them went to Jerusalem, and 1 to the rest of the world. Because of the things that that city and those people have suffered. Do you remember Fiddler on the Roof? And you remember the star, I guess, the patriarch of the family was a guy by the name of Tevye. And Tevye in this film, it's a classic movie. At one point in the movie, he looks up toward heaven as if to pray, and he says, I know, we're the chosen people. But once in a while, couldn't you choose somebody else? Because he knows that to be chosen has also meant a great deal of suffering. It brings up a question. Why? Why have the Jews been hated throughout the centuries so much? Why has anti-Semitism been expressed in the manner in which it has, even until recent times? Well, we're going to look at our verses this morning. We started with verse 15 last week, and we want to read now down to verse 20, including verse 15. Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let him who is on the housetop not go down to take anything out of his house. And let him who is in the field not go back to get his clothes. But woe to those who are pregnant and those who are nursing babies in those days, and pray that your flight may not be in winter or on the Sabbath. I want to confess to you that I really struggled with Matthew 24 in this sense. I thought, do I really want in the first series that we go through to be this technical, this prophetic, until what has happened recently over in the Middle East started erupting? Then I thought, well, we all want to know where all this fits biblically and in the end times. But also, what I'm hoping is happening by now is that we're seeing how all of these verses fit together. That we're seeing how portions of Daniel and Matthew and Revelation and 2 Thessalonians 2, etc., all elucidate one another, and we start getting the big picture. And it starts clicking. We go, oh, I get it. I see. Because Jesus would have us know and understand the days in which we live. Now, I want you to listen to this statement. This person says, quote, "The streets of our country are in turmoil. The universities are filled with students rebelling and rioting. The country is in danger, yes, danger from within and danger from without. We need law and order. Without law and order, our nation cannot survive." Powerful words, not of a modern politician or statesman. Those words were spoken by Adolf Hitler in 1932. Which brings up this point. Dictators will not take over areas always by force, but will come during a time of turmoil opportunistically to offer their little solution, their peace plan. And that's important to recognize because a time is coming when another powerful world ruler will sense the turmoil in the world and come up with a solution that people will buy into, including the Jewish nation. And that covenant, that deal, that peace plan will be broken right in the middle. So let's look at our text a little more carefully this morning. We understand there's an obvious point to be made that catastrophe is coming for Zion. Just a quick read of the verses so far reveals that for the people living in Judea, Jerusalem, great catastrophe is going to befall them. And we notice that the language here is localized. It's geospecific. He mentions the trouble is coming to Judea, not Philadelphia, Judea. That though there will be worldwide problems, something very tragic is going to happen to those people living around Jerusalem and to the people who are Jewish people, because it says, pray that your flight will not be in the winter or on the Sabbath. The prophet Jeremiah, looking through time, announces a day is coming. There is none like it, for it is the time of Jacob's trouble. Israel's trouble. Trouble is going to befall the Jews. You say, wait a minute, trouble has already befallen them on a number of occasions. You're right. But all of those things have merely been previews of coming attractions. They will all pale in comparison to what is coming in these last days. So we noticed last week, and we read it again, that Jesus in this section harkens back to what Daniel the prophet wrote. When you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet. So let's go back to Daniel the prophet today. Let's go to Daniel chapter 9 and see what Jesus Christ was referring to. The section you're about to read, only four verses, are considered the backbone of prophecy because everything hangs off of that backbone. And if you can understand Daniel 9, you're going to go much further ahead in understanding the big scope of what's coming in the future. Daniel chapter 9, beginning in verse 24, the angel Gabriel is speaking to Daniel the prophet, and he says, 70 weeks are determined for your people and for your holy city to finish the transgression, to make an end of sin, to make reconciliation for iniquity, to bring in everlasting righteousness, to seal up vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy. Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the command to restore and build Jerusalem until Messiah the Prince, there shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. The street shall be built again and the wall, even in troublesome times. And after the 62 weeks, Messiah shall be cut off. Boy, that's interesting. But not for himself. And the people of the prince who is to come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary. The end of it shall be with a flood. Until the end of the war, desolations are determined. Then he shall confirm a covenant with many for 1 week. But in the middle of the week, he shall bring an end to sacrifice and offering. And on the wing of abomination shall be one who makes desolate, even until the consummation which is determined is poured out on the desolate. Four verses. It's like a Reader's Digest version of prophecy. Four verses that deal with Israel, Israel's Messiah, the Antichrist, the abomination of desolation. There's a few things to notice about Daniel's 70-week prophecy. Number one, it refers to the Jews. 70 weeks are determined, he says, for your people and for your holy city. Your people, the Jewish people, your holy city, the city of Jerusalem. So the main player in this end time scenario, or at least 70-week scenario, is the Jewish people. Second thing to notice is that it's a set period of time. 70 weeks are determined. The word determined means to cut out or to mark. That is, here is a divine calendar, a timetable. And there are certain events that must happen during that prophetic timetable. And how much time is it? Well, it says 70 weeks, right? Now, if you have my translation, it says 70 weeks. It may not in other versions. And here's why. It actually in Hebrew reads Shevuim Shevim, 70 sevens. Shevuim Shevim. So it's undisclosed. It's unspecific as to what seven means. 77. Seven what? Seven days? 7 years? Seven what? So here it's translated 7 weeks, and I'm not going to go through all the rigmarole of research, but the consensus of Hebrew scholars and Christian scholars is that it refers to weeks of years. 70 weeks of years are determined for Israel, or 490 years. Translators feel so strongly about that that the Revised Standard Version simply renders it 70 weeks of years are determined for your people and for your city. The New Century Version is even more specific and clearer when it says 490 years are determined. Because it says Shevuim Shevim, 77s. All right, Daniel's hearing this. Daniel would have understood the concept of 490 years, 70 sets of 7 years. And here's why. It says in chapter 9 at the beginning that Daniel is reading the prophet Jeremiah, and it dawns on him that the Jews, in Babylonian captivity, are just about at the end of the 70-year captivity. He reads that Jeremiah predicts, you'll be in Babylon 70 years. He goes, hey, 70 years is almost up. So he gets on his knees and he prays to God that they would be forgiven and they would be delivered. At that time, the angel Gabriel comes and gives him this revelation. Now, have you ever wondered why the Jews were in captivity for 70 years? Why 70? Why not 50? Why not 100? Why 70? I'm glad you asked. Because the Bible tells us exactly why it was 70 years and why Jeremiah predicted it. The very last chapter of the book of 2 Chronicles says these people are going into the captivity of Babylon, and then the reason is given. To fulfill the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah until the land had enjoyed her Sabbaths. As long as she lay desolate, she kept the Sabbath to fulfill 70 years. What does that mean? You remember back in the law, the Jews were told to keep the Sabbath every week, right? You work 6 days, and the seventh day you kick back, man, you cruise. It's the Sabbath. Well, there was not only a Sabbath day, there was a Sabbath year. You remember that? If you have a field, God said, for 6 years you sow and you reap. But the seventh year, you let the land rest. You don't work it. You let whatever grows of itself grow and you get that. Israel disobeyed the Sabbath year commandment for 490 years. How many Sabbath years is that? 70. God is in effect saying, you owe me 70 years. And in taking them to Babylon out of their land, letting it rest 70 years, it could, in God's estimation, recover. So Daniel knew that. He knew why they were there. And he knew the 70 years was about up and that they were going to go back soon. Well, if you look a little more carefully, you'll notice that the time of the Messiah's arrival in Jerusalem is told to us. After 69 weeks, 7 and 62, it says, well, look at it, verse 25, know, therefore, and understand. So that's a commandment for you to know and understand this. That from the going forth of the command to restore and build Jerusalem until Messiah, the prince, there shall be 7 weeks. It's 49 years. and 62 weeks. Add to that 434 years. Gives you a total of 69 weeks or 483 years. The street will be built again and the wall, even in troublesome times. And after the 62 weeks, Messiah shall be cut off, but not for himself. So know this and understand this. A commandment will come to restore and rebuild Jerusalem. From the time of that commandment, 483 years later, Messiah is going to show up. That in and of itself is an amazing statement. Fortunately, we know the exact date the commandment was given for the Jews to go back and restore and rebuild the city. It was March 14th, 445 BC, a date well attested to in the annals of history. It was given by one Artaxerxes Longimanus, a Persian emperor, who told the Jews to go back and not just build the temple, but build the city, the wall, and the streets. And incidentally, guess how long it took for them to build the wall and the streets? 49 years. 7 weeks of years. Well, this fascinated a guy who was reading through this. His name was Sir Robert Anderson. He was the investigative head of Scotland Yard. He put pencil to paper and started figuring this all out. And he took the 483 years, 69 weeks, and said, how many days would that be? So he figured it would be 173,880 days. So he counted from March 14th, 445 BC, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 173,880 days. And he thought, okay, whatever day I come up with must be a significant date, and the Messiah must be around. Well, the date he ended up with was April 6th, 32 AD, 173,880 days after March 14th, 445 BC. That turns out to be a most significant date of a most significant occurrence. In the Jewish calendar, it would be the 10th of Nisan, not the truck. The Jewish calendar month, Nisan, and on the 10th of Nisan was the day that lambs were taken from the flocks to be presented as the Passover lamb. April 6, 32 AD, 10th of Nisan. It was also the very day Jesus Christ, the first and only time, presented himself to the Jewish nation as their Messiah, when on the Mount of Olives he sat on a donkey and palm branches were waved and he entered into the city of Jerusalem. Wow! And you know what he said on that very day? Listen to these words. He said, if you, Jerusalem, had known, even you, especially in this your day, the things that make for your peace, but now they are hidden from your eyes. Your enemies will surround you on every side and level you, and they will not leave in you one stone upon another because you did not know the time of your visitation. What day was Jesus referring to? What time of visitation was Jesus referring to? The day he held them accountable as a Jewish nation to know. The 173,880th day after March 14th, 445 BC. Because Daniel said, given to him by Gabriel, from that day till that day, and Messiah will show up. Spectacular.
Boy, there's so much to see in Israel that helps bring studies of the Bible like this alive. There's a lot we can learn from that land, both historically and about what will take place in the future. And that wraps up our study for today. But if you'd like a copy of this teaching, give us a call, and we'd be happy to send you a copy on CD for just $6. And that number is 1-800-922-1888. Or you can order a copy from our website. That's connectiononline.org/radio. And you can also order by writing us at The Connection. That's P.O. Box 95707, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87199. And when you contact us, let us know about how the current series, Rumblings of War and the Prince of Peace, resonates with you. And a quick reminder that we appreciate your financial support of The Connection. You can make a donation when you visit connectiononline.org/give or just call us 1-800-922-1888.
And make the connection.
Continue to explore the trouble that's coming to the Middle East on our next program. So I hope you'll have some time to join us here on The Connection, a presentation of Connection Communications, connecting you to God's never-changing truth in ever-changing times.